Welcome to ICUP with We.
In the name of science, discovery, knowledge, and understanding, this is our ongoing examination of the Insane Clown Posse.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Eric.
And today we're reviewing 2019's Fearless Fred Fury. Guys, welcome to the episode. I am Aaron, and today I am here to talk to you about the Insane Clown Posse. Who are they, you ask? Violent J and Shaggy 2 Dope. And why am I talking about them, you may ask? Well, it all started with a dream, an ambition to ramble to dozens of people for hours. Then COVID hit, and I was not able to ramble live. And I thought, why not start a podcast? And then I thought, you know what? I'm going to go smoke some weed. And then I thought up the name while I was very high, ICUP with We. Actually, I think it was ICUP with Me, but we changed it when I brought in somebody special that I'm about to introduce right now. And that is my very, very good friend. I'm about to do an impression of him. And then you'll meet him. So this is my impression of my co-host with the co-most. In the name of science, discovery, knowledge, and understanding, this is our ongoing examination of the Insane Clown Posse. And I'm Eric. Eric, how you doing?
I felt like that was me saying that to me. My mind
was
is
it a blown. Good impression?
I have no idea. I couldn't tell you if that's a good impression of me. I don't know.
Guys, tweeted us.
I don't think I could do an impression of me. If you asked me to do an impression of me, I don't know what I would do.
That's a good point. I don't think I know what I would do either.
I mean, I don't know what I would do if I did an impression of you. I know what you sound like, but I don't know how to sound like you.
We have very distinct voices.
I think that's true. If I did yours, I'd be like, baby, all the time.
Baby.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, I like saying baby.
If it helps, right now, I am wearing Crocs, shorts with no underwear and no shirt, and I am currently getting a tattoo of a taco.
And if it helps, you are frighteningly close to what I'm wearing right now. Crocs, shorts, no underwear.
Yes.
But I am wearing a hoodie, no t-shirt.
Oh, hell yeah. You want to hear something funny? So I had mentioned this to you before, but my mom is here visiting, and it's been almost 3 years since last time she's visited. So we haven't seen each other in a long time. She's never listened to this show, but I put it on in the car for her the other day, the last episode.
Good.
And we get to the part where we're talking about what we're wearing, and you're talking about people seeing your little troll dick and little troll balls, and we're like 15 minutes into the show, right? And she's laughed once or twice, but about 15 minutes in, she goes, "What does any of this have to do with ICP?" And I said, "Nothing."
Usually we start touching on that half an hour in.
We'll get there. Don't worry. We'll eventually get there. And then we go on to talk about Waluigi McIntyre and all that stuff. And I was like, yeah, okay.
Last episode was a little silly, I think.
A little bit. I think a lot of them are. But hey, my only hope is that amongst the rabid, hardcore, every week listeners, that they enjoy what the show is and has become. I would fully understand if an ICP fan that finds out about this podcast jumps in at episode 52 and 15 minutes in goes, "What the fuck is this?" I could understand that. But also, right. I would hope if you find ICP entertaining that maybe you find what we're doing entertaining. I don't know.
I think we're pretty entertaining.
I hope so. Text us.
That is also a hope for me.
Text us. We'll both give you our numbers. It's at the end after the outro music.
Yeah, it'll be a secret hidden sit in silence for 15 minutes.
Yeah, and then we'll give you a riddle.
A riddle that'll give you our number.
Right, exactly.
Could you imagine if we had an ICUP with Wii hotline? We just buy some sort of 800 number and it'll just automatically reroute to our phones.
That would be amazing.
That would be great.
Yeah.
That would be such a waste of time and money for us.
It would be really dumb, really stupid. Because, well, we'll tell you later. Actually, we can tell you right now as well. You can find us online right now. You don't even need to call an 800 number. All you need is a Twitter. Just go to Twitter, ICUPWWE. You can talk to us. If you, as we generally say, are more of an email ninja, just email us, ICUPWWE@gmail.com.
But Eric, wouldn't it be so much more fun to actually hear Mike's voice as he tells us we're wrong about one of the more recent albums?
Yeah, sure. I think that would be exciting. Are we going to be able to do that at some point in the future? Hear the Juggalo Judgment gents tell us that we're idiots?
Yeah, probably very, very soon in the future.
Okay, good.
Eric, I have a bone to pick with life. I need your help.
Okay, let me see if I can assist.
As y'all know, I am very much so a pastries for Sunday morning breakfast kind of guy.
That's true. Although sometimes bagels, which is not really a pastry. Yeah.
Not really a pastry. I guess we could say breakfast breads.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
Donuts, bagels. Today I was eating a delicious cinnamon swirl coffee cake that I got at Target.
Wonderful.
Who convinced us that this was breakfast?
Coffee cake?
I mean, but then on top of that, muffins, donuts. Listen, I know that this is a conversation that has been talked about before.
French toast.
But I feel we owe it a conversation. Exactly.
You're asking why
we owe it a conversation because we eat a lot of these.
Yeah. Why treats. Why are sweet baked goods breakfast? That's raisin what you're bread. Asking. Mm-hmm. But why not? I've heard that that's a very American thing. And they're like, you're eating dessert for breakfast. And I'm like, well, who decided sweet things have to be dessert? These are all arbitrary terms placed on different foods. Foods are foods. You can eat whatever you want, whenever you want. If I wanted to have scrambled eggs for dessert, I could. Nobody would be going,
why are you having breakfast for dessert?
So like, yeah, I could eat some pancakes for dessert.
What if places start doing that? They're like, anything for dessert? We've got sunny side up eggs. We've got some hash browns. We have toast, bacon, sausage. We've got waffles, French toast. You know, our pancakes are really good. People will be like, what? I just had a steak and a baked potato. What are you talking about? And they're like, breakfast for dessert. It's the new trend.
You know what? I'll take a bowl of cheese grits for my dessert, please.
There you go. There
you go. Yeah, no, I don't know. I eat some eggs and I feel good energy throughout the day. I eat two donuts and I'm like, I'm recording this podcast and going back the fuck to sleep.
You know, I think people say all the time, like, well, Americans eat dessert for breakfast. I feel like I've heard that term a bunch of times. But mm-hmm. I think it's just there are just as many breakfast foods, which makes no sense. Why are certain foods regarded as breakfast when they could easily be eaten any time of the day that are not sweet, though? Bacon, eggs, sausage, toast, hash browns, home fries, all of those things are savory foods that are widely regarded as breakfast foods. You know what I mean?
Right. But you could eat them throughout the day and not be weird.
Right. And they are not dessert. Unless we make breakfast for dessert a thing. Hashtag breakfast for dessert. Tweet it.
Guys, get it trending, please.
We are changing the way people think about dessert here on this show. That's what's happening.
That's our larger legacy.
That's true. If we accomplish one thing with this show, it's changing how people think about dessert.
I would say that we're going to be written about in history textbooks for this.
I hope so.
Yeah, I want a teacher one day to be teaching a lesson about us and a kid say, wait a minute, why were they talking? What kind of podcast is this? And then the teacher just kind of give a sigh and be like, ICP, I guess.
Nobody's really sure, but they believe it began as an ICP podcast. I'd really love for a kid to raise their hand and go, wait a minute. There was a time when biscuits and gravy wasn't dessert. I'm going to be honest. When we start this show, obviously, you know, I've taken some notes, done some research. We've both listened to the album. We've put our thoughts down. But I never know where we're headed when we start. Like, I could never predict it. If you asked me where the show was going to go 20 minutes ago, I wouldn't have been able to tell you we'd be right here right now.
Breakfast for Dessert would not have been anywhere near something that we would talk about.
No, that's true.
Let me tell you, though, I am picturing like a high-end restaurant that has like the butlers that wheel around the dessert carts, but just mounds of scrambled eggs.
Like a breakfast buffet coming around. It's like a
breakfast buffet cart. Like anything from the dessert cart.
Or like a really like
a mound of scrambled eggs on their plate.
Super fancy tableside dessert. Like instead of making, you know, some sort of flambé dessert, they come over and they're making you an omelet. What would you like in your dessert omelet, sir?
A mobile omelet station for tableside dessert omelets.
Exactly.
I have to ask. If I were to want some sort of like Southwestern themed omelet, would they bring the tableside omelet maker? And then I say, I would really love it like Southwestern. Would they then bring the tableside guac person? So you have two people making things tableside right next to you.
If you would like some guacamole on the side, like, I mean, who doesn't want some whipped cream on top of their cherry pie or whatever, right? Yes, they're going to come over and tableside make guacamole right next to the mobile omelet station. That's how that's going to work.
I like that plan. Tableside omelet for dessert with some tableside guac on the side.
Hell yes. Save some room for dessert. It's going to be a big omelet.
It's going to be a big omelet. You know, I had a great omelet on tour in Arkansas at this like brunch. It was like a brunch buffet place, and it was like I think $15, but it was all you can eat. And if you go, like, if you're on tour, you can pack some food away.
Sure.
I remember I even had wads of bacon rolled up in napkins in my pockets when I left.
Exactly.
I specifically remember that, and I think that I ruined those shorts with bacon grease, and I had to throw them away. But it was worth it. Anyways, they had a guy that was making little omelets on demand. One of the best omelets I had ever had.
Damn, there you go.
I can make myself a good omelet, but that thing was incredible.
That's dessert.
Yeah, no, it was to cap off a long meal of of regular food. Good times. Guys, we have some ICP stuff to talk about today.
We do.
And with that comes a bunch of new facts and fiction. Guys, you don't know this, but every single time Eric presents stuff about an album, he throws in one lie. We've never told you, but all this stuff that you keep thinking is truth, some of it were just bold-faced lies from Eric.
Disclaimer, this is just a joke. We do not include hidden lies in our show. To our knowledge, all of the information we present is true and factual.
We call it 9 facts and a lie. And he does great at it. Eric, go ahead and tell us your 9 facts and a lie.
Yeah, you're going to have to guess which one of these is not true.
True.
All right, so here we go. In April of 2017, Violent J announced that he had received the name of the next Joker's card, its face, and its backstory via an email in his brain.
Oof.
Yeah. He also said that the concept of the album, which is very much focused on revenge and fighting, all came to him, which he said is not really him. That's not who he is. Before everything in his life completely fell apart, so probably at some point in 2016, and it became, it sort of manifested, right? This
right.
story of revenge and needing to stand up for yourself and fighting back, really over the next year or two, or three, I guess, all played out in his life. So he claims that this was the Dark Carnival communicated to him and I guess could see what was coming in his life.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Again, that was not the lie. That the email in the brain and all that coming to him the way that was, that's a truth.
That is a truth.
Now, whether he was lying or not, we'll never know.
Maybe that's a lie.
Hey, we'll see. So, Fearless Fred Fury was officially revealed for the first time at 2017's Hallowicked show on, you guessed it, October 31st, 2017. They actually had the big banners hanging up with the name and the font and everything like that. In June of 2018, ICP announced via social media that Fearless Fred Fury would release on October 26th, 2018, which was a lie, because it did not release at that time. At this time, they also revealed the names of several tracks, including Peekaboo, which we know from last week actually was on Gloomy Sunday, and they announced that Fearless Fred Fury would come with an EP called Flip the Rat. Now, on October 24th, 2018, just 2 days ahead of the scheduled release, ICP announced that pre-orders for the album would go up in November, and the album itself would release on February 15th, 2019. So,
dang.
Yeah, yeah. If you were waiting for Fearless Fred Fury, ready to run out to your local record store or purchase or stream on your service of choice, 2 days ahead of time. You were very disappointed.
You know, I feel that because this is me waiting for the new Lego Star Wars game.
I mean, hey, the Skywalker saga has been delayed many times.
So many. Yeah, it's worse.
Yeah, much worse. I'm beginning to think that this is vaporware and it's never coming, so we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the track list for Fearless Fred Fury was revealed on January 28th, 2019. Basically, you had to decipher a series of clues on ICP's social media channels that ultimately give you a phone number to call. And when you call the number, it directs you to go to a microsite called fredisfearless.com, which is still active. I went and looked at it. I was surprised that it was still up. And it just showed the date that the album's coming out, had a picture of Shaggy and Jay, and a list of all the songs on the album.
I'm surprised they didn't toss an extra, like, $15 out to get the Wix.com ad from not popping up about how this site was developed there.
Wouldn't you think? But, hey.
Wouldn't you think?
But, hey, whatever. All of the physical and digital copies of the album Fearless Fred Fury, when it did finally release, came with a code to download Flip the Rat. Also, there was a special version for indie record stores that was a double disc physical. So you had a paper slip cover that went over the disc for Fearless Fred Fury, and then there was a Digipak CD additionally for Flip the Rat, so you got both together. Here's some interesting stuff. The liner notes for this album, when you look at them, include ads for a lot of new ICP releases. One called Strums and Drums, The Acoustic Sessions, a best-of collection that included Supervillains Hit List, ICP's Funniest Shit Ever, ICP Most Unusual Shit, and ICP Greatest Stories Ever. Now, the only one that I think actually came out was Supervillains Hit List, but they were all supposed to release in 2019, and they all had dates that they were supposed to release. So I don't know what happened there.
Hmm.
Yeah, pretty weird. There's also an ad for off-brand Funko Pops, and I'm actually kind of shocked that Funko hasn't actually made ICP Pops. Like, why not? You should.
Yeah, that would absolutely make sense.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure this is the first ICP album ever to include lyrics for every song, at least in the record store version, which was kind of interesting.
Yeah, which is why the album booklet on Discogs that I'm flipping through right now is incredibly long.
Incredibly long. So production credits on this, yes, we will. Production credits on this album are all over the place. We've got, for different tracks, production credits going to Straight Jacket, Seven, Mike P, DJ Mysterioso, Devereaux, Kuma, Dr. Punch, several of these producers that we've heard stuff from the past that we liked very much, and some that we're not super familiar with yet. So, I mean, Dr. Punch is Violent J. I'm not sure who DJ Mysterioso is, if that's Shaggy or not. I guess I'd have to look that up. We probably could, probably should, but I'm not gonna right now. Now, here's an interesting fact. Violent J was quoted before the album came out as saying that previously Crooked Preacher Killers on Hell's Pit was their most wicked and darkest song ever. And I don't know if it is, but it's a great song. We both like that song very much.
Yes.
But he says, there's a song on Fearless Fred Fury that beats it and is even darker and more wicked. It didn't say which song that was. I have to assume I know which one he was talking about. And we'll talk about that later.
Right.
They dropped two singles ahead of the album's release. One was What the Fuck in November of 2018. The other was Fury in January of 2019. And then Satellite and Nobody's Fault were also released as singles later. They did videos for Fury and Nobody's Fault. So there you go. There's the info on this record.
There we go. There's the info on this record.
Yeah.
And great info that was, Eric. Thank you so much, guys.
You're welcome.
We know now that the lie in those was the fact that the album was going to release on October 26th because it then got pushed to February 15th.
That's true. February 15th.
That was the lie. If you knew that that was the lie, tweet at us. If you didn't, tweet at us.
If you're not listening to this right now, and you don't know either way, or even that we asked a question, tweet at us.
And if you are listening to this right now, and you have no opinion, email us.
Oh, yeah, okay. But do a brain email, like the one that Violent J got.
A brain email.
Yeah.
Without further ado, let's go ahead and start, as always, like we do, starting talking about the album cover. What are we looking at here?
Well, we're looking at Fearless Fred Fury. It is, in many ways, an unmistakable Joker's card cover, right? This, no matter who it was, no matter what it was, if I saw this on a shelf, I would know what this is. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Black background. We've got the faces of the Joker's card here. I like that they kept this to just three colors. You've got the black, you've got the red, and then there's that sort of gray color that accents it.
Very light stone gray.
Yeah. And I like the colors they chose. But I think just the design and image might be one of the weakest Joker's card covers to me personally. The face doesn't read. It's a bit visually confusing. You kind of have to pay attention and go, okay, what am I looking at here? There's also, when you look, it's Fearless Fred Fury coming out of a smokestack and his fist punching, and his other hand he's holding a crowbar. I'm not sure why he's holding a crowbar, but I guess he's gonna hit you with it. But Fearless Fred Fury punches you. That's one of his things. He's all about punching. The fist, the design on the fist, really cool. The design on the smokestack and the smoke coming out, very kind of curvy and cool. For some reason, Fearless Fred Fury's head and hair are all angular. So everything is curvy, but his head is very angular, and the colors are split down the middle and mirrored, so you have opposite colors. The whole thing reads a little bit confusing. They never really directly reference the fact that he's coming out of the smokestack of a factory, from what I can tell, but it feels like a concept they could have done a lot with. I really like the little Flip the Rat in his pocket, because you can see Flip down there. That's kind of cool. I like Flip's design. He's good. What did you think?
Oh, Flip's design is amazing. Yeah, I had a very similar notes as far as the stark contrast between the very clean, smooth, and curvatures of like the fist design and the smoke design. And then his head is just very harsh angles and harsh contrasts. It's just, I think, Eric, the fact that you and I both dabble in some graphic design, maybe that's what brings us more attuned to this. I don't know. I also think that they could have done a lot more with like explaining the smokestack. Because they explain the fist. They explain the tattoo on his fist, 665.
Mm-hmm.
They explain Flip. And Flip looks incredible here. I love Flip in this cover. The crowbar is not unexplained, and so is the coming out of a smokestack.
Yeah, I feel like there was probably more story here that we don't hear, and we can talk more about that in a moment. My only thought about the angular, and his head is also sort of cocked at a strange angle as well, but I can't help but wonder if it was intentional, because you've got this sort of pop around the fist that makes it look like he's punching, and I wonder if his head is supposed to also look like a comic booky impact pop, like a pow, you know. And I'm not sure maybe. If that's intentional or not. Either way, I think it's a visually confusing image to look at. His face doesn't read as a face right away. So
yeah, no, it definitely doesn't. It definitely doesn't. And for a Joker's card, you need the face to read like a face, because that is the whole thing.
Yeah, to me,
you know,
colors. One of the best. I think that the colors they choose are really cool looking. Design, definitely not one of the best.
Yeah, no, this colorway, my God, knocks it out of the park. I would wear this colorway on a shirt.
You should.
I would not wear this face design on a shirt. I although I would say, ICP, do it. Make a pocket tee. Where it's printed like you have a little Flip coming out of your pocket on Whoa. Your t-shirt.
That would be badass.
Wear the shit out of that shirt.
Yeah, that's rad.
Surprise, idiots. ICP made that shirt, but good luck finding one now.
Yeah, I would wear the bullshit out of that shirt. Anyways.
You know what's weird, though? FFF. If you translate that into alphanumeric code.
Uh-huh.
That would be 666, FFF 666.
Oh, it would.
But the fist has 665, so that's FFE.
Fearless Fred Erection.
Earlobes. Oh, erection, yeah.
Oh, I got that Fearless Fred Erection, baby. That's 665.
Yikes.
Guys, we got to move on. There's some other things in here that we should talk about. This is a whole big booklet. I think they take the same design and put it on the CD, except for it cuts off like right around where Flip is. So you get more of the head. And I think that it translates a lot more here that is a face.
Yeah.
Cause it puts more emphasis on it, I think. Then we get through introductions, got some photos of Violent J and Shaggy kind of interlaced throughout the lyric sheets.
I don't really understand their outfits, though. What are they wearing here? Looks like they're dressed exactly the same, twinsies, but they've got some kind of iridescent, shiny track jackets on with like
purple and gold.
Yeah, purple and gold, like black with purple and gold on it. And then they've got red t-shirts and white sneakers. But it looks like they're both wearing blue jeans that the entire front of the legs are ripped out. I can't tell if that's what's going on or if they're just bleached out, but it's definitely a style.
Well, can we also talk about how Shaggy's wearing white gloves and Violent J isn't?
If you, where the staples are at the middle, there's a picture of the both of them together, and they're both wearing gloves, but Violent J has all the fingers cut off, and Shaggy has a thumb and then his, like, ring finger and pinky finger cut off.
Yeah, what is this?
I don't know what's going on with gloves. Yeah.
Very odd. Yeah, no, I don't get what they're wearing either. I think it's a little confusing. And then we got the ever-so-sweet-looking Strums and Drums acoustic session.
I'd be very curious to hear that.
I'm hoping that it does come out so we can talk about it.
Yeah.
Then these clearly ripped off Funko Pop vinyl figures of them.
But it's just drawings of them. Like,
right,
concept
it's
drawings.
Not an actual produced product, correct. Then we have advertisement for some releases that they're going to re-release on 180 gram vinyl. Then we have ICP presents the Best Of collection. This is all shit that we've talked about. Guys, that was the album cover. I hope you enjoyed it. Let's actually get into song by song, because believe it or not, y'all, we listened to this at least twice before sitting down to do this.
I listened more than twice.
Yeah, Eric, you listened three times.
Yeah.
I don't hate myself, so I listened twice. No, we'll get into it. Starting with the introduction, Eric, what do you got?
Well, we're back to a song called Intro. And honestly, this is the first of three intro slash sort of context songs. This album goes to great lengths at the beginning to really focus in on talking about Fearless Fred Fury. So this first one is a legitimate spoken word intro. And it's got sort of a, I don't even want to say, it's not like a movie voice guy. It's a documentary voiceover or audiobook kind of voice guy. And he is describing who Fred Fury and Flip the Rat are. And from what I can tell, the story is basically the dead are angered by living people who don't appreciate their life, that don't stand up for themselves, that let life pass them by, who complain about how bad their life is, etc. Fearless Fred Fury is basically the Dark Carnival's manifestation of the animosity that the dead have for the living that don't make the most of their life. And when you die, he will punch the fuck out of you. And his beatings are equal to the level of your lack of self-respect. So if you're a real piece of shit and you're not sure of yourself and you're not happy and you hate your life and you don't stand up for yourself and you're a pushover, he is really gonna beat you down. He's the fighter for the dead. Now, his pet rat Flip literally feeds on the fear that Fred instills in his victims. I'm gonna say, I think that the intro sounds good, and it's pretty cool. What did you think?
This might be the best setup for all the Joker's cards on the second deck.
Very clear, yes.
Very clear. The production value was incredible. It was long, but not needlessly long. It had a purpose every second, right? I liked it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it did exactly what it needed to do. What did you think about the second song, Red Fred, that continued to tell you about Fred, now with Shaggy and Jay talking about it?
Here's the worst part about this song. The flows were abysmal. So this song goes into, it's a continuation of who Fred is, what he does, what his demeanor is, what his punishment is, et cetera, et cetera. But it does so in the most uninteresting way. And I think that would have been fine for like a 30-second intro, but that as an entire song is punishing as hell. Also, they don't do any better at explaining Red Fred than the introduction did. You get all your information from the intro track, and then you go into this track, and it's just kind of them still talking about him, but way worse. I didn't like this song. Thoughts?
My thoughts are that the intro does a great job of clearly establishing a concept. And then the next song, this one, Red Fred, and most of the rest of the album goes a long way to then convolute and confuse that concept. Musically, the song is fine. Nothing too crazy. The flows didn't bother me, but it is sort of one note. It's straightforward, right? This track with the intro, old school Joker's card formula. This is what I would expect to come next. A song that is, hey, here's what the Joker's card is. Now here's Shaggy and Jay sort of as the prophets of the Dark Carnival, telling you their part and talking a little more about Fred Fury. And this does expand a bit on the idea of who he is. It tells us, oddly, even though the first track said that he's there when you die, this song says he's there in life and in death. And in life, He's represented by your lack of pride and your lack of dignity and your unwillingness to stand up and take revenge for what others have done to you. There's a lot of talking about fighting back. Fight back is all over this. And revenge, which I'm not sure I understand that concept. Generally, and I'm not putting ICP in a box and saying they are a band that adheres to the teachings of the Christian faith or the Bible, but fighting back and taking revenge is generally looked at as something you're not supposed to do. And right. Most of their messaging, when you get below it, is about being a good person and rising above all of the other stuff around you. This album, in one breath, tells you, you know, you need to appreciate life and stand up for yourself. And in another breath, tells you to sink down as low as your enemies and fight back and take revenge against them. It's very strange. I don't know which message they want us to hear. Maybe both. Maybe they're not sure. Also, they keep saying, Red Fred, spreadin'. I assume, maybe, this is a reference to the fact that he's depicted as the smoke coming from a factory, and as it approached, the smoke is spreading. I don't know. Because if that's not it, I have no idea why they're saying spreadin'.
Right, that's a reach, but that is the closest reach that there is to that explanation for that. Absolutely. Well, hey, let's move on to track number 3. This is Fury, which was the second single from this album. Hit me with it.
Well, first off, holy shit, Willoughby Rags is back. And I actually texted you when I got to this song. I was listening to it, and I was like, spoiler alert, Willoughby Rags is on this album. However, it almost doesn't seem like he's supposed to be here. It seems very random. But Willoughby Rags does the intro for this. It appears that this song is about somebody taking the advice from the previous song and fighting back. This is very much still an intro context song. The phrase fight back is repeated over and over throughout the song. It's the hook. The song is basically a series of descriptions of Jay and Shaggy talking about the violent ways in which they are fighting back. Violent Jay at one point says, woke up a giant, too far they pushed me, never deny I'm a scrub, but I'm no pussy. I don't know if some of this has to do with the situation with their relationships over the past few years or not, but it plays into some of the themes here about fighting back and standing up for yourself, I guess. There is a Willoughby Rags interlude again near the end. This beat is fine. This is 3 beats in a row that I would say are fine. Not that the first track has a beat, but the production on the first one is cool. The flows here are okay. Still, like I said, feels like an extension of the intro to me. But what did you think?
Yeah, this was definitely the third extension of the intro, I think. So it's said that this song, and this was annotated on Genius, is about transmuting sadness into anger, which I guess is kind of fighting back from the previous song. That makes sense. That tracks, right? Also, I'm finding something here just now while you were talking. A symbol of anger strong as a tornado of toxic pollution is rocking my cradle. That could be
another reference to the smokestack.
Another reference to the smokestack. Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking.
Yeah.
Just to toss that out there.
By the way, you mentioned Genius. And I did look up, I mean, I looked at the lyrics in the lyric book, but I also looked at Genius just because it was easy to go to it. Normally, we see a relatively similar set of people annotating and putting in notes on Genius. And they are formatted in a sort of specific way where they seem factual. I noticed that there seemed to be different people making annotations on this, and many of them are interpretive annotations. It's stuff that I'm like, well, that's kind of a stretch, you know, really different. And I don't know if there was a shift in their listener base at this time or what the overall feelings about this album were, but it didn't seem like the regular crew up on this one.
Yeah, I kind of saw that too. I don't see Mushy Mustard on this one. These newbies are gonna have to prove themselves before I start really taking what they say to heart.
Yeah, same. I felt the same.
Song wise, so yeah, it was weird to hear Willoughby Rags. It was fun hearing him back, but at the same time, because we'll hear him a couple more times throughout the rest of this album,
but not consistently, just
it's
randomly.
Not consistent yeah. enough for it to make sense, and it feels a little out of left field. Yeah, but it's fun. Beat was pretty good. Flows, again, matching the beat hits with the flows. I don't know. I just, that's fine for a few things, that, for a few points that you want to drive home, right? Because that's a good way to drive home points. But it comes across as lazy in the grand scheme of things if you overuse it. Yeah, chorus of this song, I think, was god-awful. Shaggy's flows were great. I think that, again, it's convoluting this character even more. But overall, this song was okay, is something in the background, I think.
Yeah, and to the point of, well, your point earlier, and the point of whoever made the annotation, if the concept of fight back is fight back against your sadness, your depression, your anxieties, your feelings of insecurity, if it's fight back against that, great message. If it's literally take revenge on people you feel have wronged you, maybe not a great message, but they're not clear on it. At times, it feels like they're talking more about fighting back against, you know, your, we'll say, inner demons and challenges. But at a lot of times, they are very directly talking about just fighting back against other people.
Right.
All right. Oh, yeah. Well, it's time to get to the next track, and we're going to rock down to West Verner Avenue. Tell us what your thoughts are.
So, as Eric just hinted at, this song interpolates the famous song Electric Avenue from Eddie Grant.
Yep.
We're gonna rock down to Electric Avenue. So that goes down in the chorus. So this song is about Shaggy being targeted in what kind of felt like a sort of like a drive-by scenario.
For sure.
And then him going and hunting them down and fighting back, pretty much.
Exactly.
On West Verner Avenue, which they have mentioned in multiple other songs of theirs.
I was going to say, their cover of Sir Mix-a-Lot's Posse on Broadway, they changed Broadway to Verner.
Yeah. Honestly, this song turned the album around for me. I heavily enjoyed this song. The storytelling was great, as usual. I loved the interpolation of Electric Avenue. I think that it turned out really well. Definitely the greatest song so far. Also, we have a Wilbur Rags outro. So he comes up. This is the second time he's come up. What were your thoughts?
Well, you're right. It sounds to me like Shaggy's girl gets killed in a drive-by. So then they drive down to West Verner Avenue, and then they open fire, or burn their tires, depending on which. And I guess it's not or, it's and. Open fire, then burn their tires, because they got to get out of there. I guess it's a weird track for me, because it's such a stark change of direction. I don't know, it seems goofy with that Electric Avenue hook in there. The song works. I think if it hadn't come after the first three tracks on this album, I might feel a little bit different about it, but it felt out of place. However, I will say, of the two covers, in quotes, this is the one that I much prefer, I think. Yeah, I guess I don't have a lot to say about this track. We do get that perfect Willoughby Rags outro, and I was kind of excited at that moment. I was like, okay, well, maybe we'll start to see how Willoughby Rags factors into this whole Fearless Fred Fury thing. Maybe he's part of Fred's crew or something. He's always talking about punching people and hurting people. Maybe we'll find out they're one and the same, or who knows.
Maybe Willoughby Rags is a Silver Surfer to Fearless Fred Fury's Galactus.
But then we don't get another Willoughby Rags skit for 10 tracks. And I'm like, oh, well, okay. He's not going to be on this album.
This is where you don't know it yet, but you're not going to hear him for a while.
Yeah.
And then when you hear him again, you at that point, you're like, oh, yeah.
Oh, I forgot he was on
here. He's still hanging around here.
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe we'll find out next week that Willoughby Rags is actually Flip the Rat. He just puts on an old mascot costume.
Maybe.
And chills in the pocket of Fret.
We don't know.
I really hope that's the case.
It probably is. But hey, we'll find out on that next album.
This song definitely has a big tone change from the first three, but seeming as though the previous two beforehand were just so meh that they were kind of campy, this felt fine. I didn't have too much of a kind of realization like you did. I understand why you did.
I think this felt pretty campy.
Oh, this is definitely campy.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I think that it's a good type of campy versus
type of campy.
Self-aware campy. Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's move on to another song. We'll see if it's campy or not. WTF. And by the way, this is not a song about the popular Marc Maron podcast. Eric, what is it about?
It's about using improper punctuation, because that's a question. There should be a question mark. But it's an exclamation point. WTF exclamation point. Here's what this song is about. It's about the injustices and the kind of fucked up things that go on around us every day, all of which beg the question, what the fuck? The hook asks why a wonderful thing like life has to be so fucked up and wonders how much pressure can someone take before they break. Jay says, hopefully he gets popped off soon with any luck. Basically saying, I'd be better off not here than dealing with all the horrible things going on. Conceptually, to me, this is very similar, and they've done many songs like this, where they are pondering questions about the world and life. They did How Many Times, they did Questions. Even more recently, when we talked about Phantom, they did Complicated World. I think it was Complicated World. I think musically, this song is fine. The hook is a little catchy. It's just them screaming what the fuck. But yeah, I thought this song was okay. What did you think?
This song was definitely not as good as Complicated World, which made it on our playlist. This song is also not as bad as like Questions, which I remember not liking.
Right.
It's a very middle of the road, but definitely that formula. And think about it. This is a social commentary song in 2019, when we're at the peak of social commentary.
2020 was probably the peak, but 2019 was pretty damn close.
2019 was pretty damn close. And even in 2018, when they probably recorded this song, well, when I know that they recorded this song, because this was released on November 23rd, 2018, as the first single off this album.
Right.
Even back in 2018, when they were writing and recording the song, there was a lot of shit going down in the world.
Sure.
That they could be talking about. So there's some lines in here that I just don't get. Government telling you that milk is good for the bones when it's really apparently not. I don't know if that line should make it into this song with all the other big shit happening in the world.
I also don't know if what they say is true. I don't know if it makes your bones soft, but I don't think dairy is particularly good for people. I mean, they sort of have a point, but sort of don't.
Dairy is definitely not good for humans.
But to your point, though, there are probably much bigger topics they could be talking
exactly
about here. They talk about building the wall to keep the aliens out.
Yeah, the first line is talking about building the wall to keep the aliens out, and I thought, okay, this is going to be good.
Yeah,
like, that set a very high standard for me. Because we were talking a couple weeks ago, we can't wait to hear some social commentary from them during this time period.
Yeah.
Because it's such a divisive time period. I think the chorus was pretty catchy, with the what the fuck over and over again. Flows were pretty good. The beat was okay. Overall, I think this song is very middle of the road, talking about the world song that they do.
It's fine. They could have put a little more venom into this. I mean, they touch on healthcare, but then they also touch on a bunch of things, even topics that they've handled well before, without saying a whole lot. Like, they touch on organized religion in the church, but it kind of, you know, derails a little. And I'm like, well, you didn't really make a pointed statement about that, but oh well.
You kind of just stated it existed.
Yeah.
Is very easy for them to slip into the laziness of, okay, you said a bunch of shit existed, but that's like you just tossed facts at us.
Yeah, like when you give the church money, you're actually buying Viagra for the priest so he can fuck little boys. But what? Well, I mean, you're not really making much of a statement, and there's a statement to be made, but that's kind of a oddly specific, but also oddly generalized sort of criticism of the church. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, so that's What the Fuck. That was the first single from this album. Let's move on to track 6. This one is called Satellite. How did you like Satellite? And it's not a cover of the Dave Matthews Band song, sadly.
Very, very unfortunate. I like this better than the song Satellite by Dave Matthews Band. Yeah, no. So I honestly vibe with this song big time. The beat seemed very old school, and Jay's flows were great. It's kind of all just talking about, like, don't get hung up on the day-to-day shit. In fact, it was annotated on genius.com, and this was a direct quote from a Twitter thread that Violent J posted when they were working on the song. He says, now we're working on a song called Satellite, which is actually a term we came up with at the Hatchet for when we were trying to get somebody to look at the bigger picture. We say to each other shit like, man, you need to satellite this shit, bro. Ninjas get caught up with the day-to-day grind of life, always dealing with whatever bone is right in front of you. We sometimes fail to see how blessed we actually are. Some more background info for this. This song's chorus is sung by Anthony Gonzalez, a Michigan singer signed to Monstar Entertainment, the record label created by Psychopathic Records member Light. He goes by Aunt G, and he is also in the music video, which was released June 5th, 2019.
I saw Aunt G listed with this song. I didn't catch that notation. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's buried in a very, very long about section of the song on Genius.
Mm.
But it's this chorus interpolates the chorus of Detroit band Control Freak's Satellite, which was featured as track 17 of the Juggalo show, where Violent J described the band as his homies and praised their music. Yeah. Another interpolation, I thought it was great. I think the chorus was great. I think this whole song was actually pretty fucking good. I loved the singing on the chorus from Aunt G. I love the flows on the verses. It's kind of that whole, like, look at the bigger picture thing is something that I struggle with pretty frequently, getting bogged down with the minutia, if you will.
Sure.
And needing to look at the bigger picture. I like this song a lot. What were your thoughts?
Well, so here's the thing. I don't like this song musically. I would skip the song just because it's not a style I enjoy. I don't like listening to it. With that said, I think the concept is a good one. The message that they're sending, I think the message that this song sends keeps with the theme of this album in the right way. And it also, sort of, there's a lot of themes to the album when you start to look at it, but I think it's also something important for everybody to remember. You know, you've heard the phrase, hey, every day above ground is a good day, or don't sweat the small stuff and it all becomes small stuff. You know, things like that. And that's what this song is about. You know, it's, hey, when you think your life sucks because you're focused on what you think you're missing or what's fucking up your life right now, zoom out and look at what you do have, you know, basically saying if you're alive, you've got it better than someone who isn't. Or if you've got something, you're doing better than somebody who's got nothing. And even that person who has nothing probably has something more than somebody else. So they're really trying to make you go, hey, appreciate what you've got. I appreciate that. I appreciate that message. With that said, I don't like this song. I wouldn't listen to it again.
That's fair enough. This song is definitely a very different style for them musically.
Yep.
And it's a style that I happen to enjoy and you don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is what it is.
And they do at least one other song that's dramatically different for them stylistically that I really do like. So
we will get to that when we get to that. Let's first move on to track number 7. This is a song called Seriously Hilarious. Thoughts?
First off, there is some awesome stuff about this song. They refer to themselves as Inner City Posse on this track. They reference the song Ghetto Zone, which is the first track on Dog Beats. But I want to know who this song is about, because it sounds as if they're talking about being taken as a joke by somebody, but then, you know, lashing out against that person. Maybe lashing out against mainstream artists that don't take them seriously. Seems like there are some disses against artists that they claim maybe they helped bring up or came up as juggalos, but have abandoned it when they started to get big because they don't want to be associated. I'm not sure who that references, though, because most of the other artists that they've worked with that, for instance, are on Magic Ninja or something, do still seem to want to be associated with that juggalo culture. This is them basically threatening violence against their detractors, saying that they'd never really want somebody to get hurt, but it's done in such a sarcastic way that clearly they're saying they do want that. Right. Now, to me, I think the beat's a little bit bland. It does not stand out. I couldn't tell you what it sounds like now, even after listening 3 or 4 times. The song is okay and interesting enough. They do some cool shit here. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, so there's some definitely cool shit in here. I loved Ghetto Zone. I loved Inner City Posse. Like, that was all great. The throwbacks and stuff. And you can tell that there's definitely some venom in their words, but you don't know. So the exact line, these bitch-ass artists out here ride the juggalo escalator all damn day. They think the greatest on the way up, then they walk away knowing the rest all hate us. They watch what they say. That's annotated on Genius, but it's only annotated so many artists rode their way up on juggalo fame. But I don't understand. I get, there's a lot of artists that rode their way up on juggalo fame, but the second half of it, of they would kind of excommunicate themselves when they got big, I don't know if that happened.
Yeah, I don't think I know of a whole lot of big famous artists right now that came up in the juggalo or horrorcore scene, and then we're like, no, I'm going to abandon that to get famous. And if it happened and I'm wrong, if Dua Lipa started out as a juggalo and then dropped it when she started to get big, I don't know.
I hope she did.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, if anybody knows of like a specific instance or artist, let us know. Cause I genuinely want to know. Other than that, I think musically, the flows were kind of meh. The beat was kind of meh. Overall, this song was pretty forgettable.
Yeah, that's how I felt, too. Those lyrically, some interesting stuff. Outside that, the song didn't do much for me. So,
yeah.
All right, moving on to track number 8. This one is called Game Over. So as people that play video games, and both of which who in some capacity make a career of video games, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, I don't understand. So this kind of comes out of left field, having a song about video game addiction, which is definitely an addiction.
Recognized as a real addiction, I suppose. Yeah,
it's been recognized as an actual addiction. And you're right, it's two people that in some capacities make a living off of playing video games or something in the capacity of video games. Mm-hmm. I think that this is, this came out of left field for me. It really did. I think musically, though, the beat was pretty cool with kind of the video game noises in the back. I really like that. But it goes into, like, he lives in the basement of his mother's house, and he stays down there all day just playing video games. It's a mess. There's a line in here that talks about how if the city were to walk down in the basement of this house, they would condemn the whole house based on the conditions of the basement alone. His health has gone out of the wayside. He names, playing Call of Duty hooked me, which is a very popular game for people that love video games.
Sure.
Talk about, I can't wait to see my girl again next time I'm playing Sims, was actually one of my favorite lines in this song. I thought that was hilarious. This song was way too long for what it was. Oh yeah. And then it goes into this whole thing about yelling at 9-year-olds online and how it's so easy to yell at little kids. And it's just like, I feel like even though this is a clear, concise talk about video games song and that their addiction, I feel like even then it was all over the place, right?
It's definitely all over the place. Yes,
like I mean, he talks about like jerking off multiple times in different capacities in the song. I don't understand that. It's a very convoluted, like very focused, but yet still so convoluted song. It's insane.
This song to me, and I have a bunch of issues with it that I'll briefly touch on, but it reads to me as some sort of jock kid making fun of a nerdy kid for being like, whatever, loser, why don't you stay home and play games while I go out and have sex with girls? Like, that's what this is. There's a lot of misses conceptually here. So the song, like you said, is about a person so involved in playing games, they stop going outside, stop taking care of themselves, stop being interested in sex, which seems to be one of their main focuses here, because they bring that up a lot. Yeah. And seems to be mostly focused on COD MP, I guess. But it plays into a lot of video game tropes that really bother me. The whole living in your parents' basement and the use of outdated retro video game sound effects, which sound cool in the beat, but have nothing to do with modern video games. It's the wider societal view of generally older people that are not part of video game culture that go, video games are for kids and they're, you know, they look like 8-bit characters and it's jump over the thing and it sounds like chiptunes. Like, no, video games are very different cinematic experiences and in a lot of capacities, multiplayer experiences now that are totally different. And they touch on it sometimes like they get it. And at other times, it's like you totally don't get it. I also think that video games is no longer a thing for nerds that, you know, it's a, you know, weirdo that lives in their parents' basement. Video games is a bigger industry than music and movies put together. Like, everybody plays games in some capacity. Like, accept it. Now, they could have gone one direction in this and really made this a serious song about somebody who is letting their life pass them by because they are stuck in a virtual world. They could have done that, but they kind of didn't. They could have built an arc in here that was supporting the concepts behind Fearless Fred Fury about fighting back. But they didn't. They basically just tell about this person, putting them down and how miserable they are and how gross they are. And then that's kind of the end. They started a loser. They're a loser in the middle. And they're a loser at the end. There's no arc. There's no change. Nothing happens. This song doesn't feel like it's in the right place on this album. It feels like a miss conceptually. It just feels like somebody sort of raging against people that play video games and calling them losers or something. I don't know.
And it's not even like clear that, oh, maybe this is all the shit that they heard when they were kids playing video. Maybe this is like what their bullies said to them when they like, it's not even that. It's not clear because they're also, it sounds like they're on the opposite side of it. It sounds like they're on the judgment side of it.
Very judgmental. And when it first started, honestly, I was kind of stoked about it. I was like, oh, sweet. They're going to make a song about video games and like sort of lean into it and have fun with it, because I would have to think the vast majority of their audience would appreciate that, or it would make sense, or they're going to like lace all their rhymes with references to games or something. But yeah. I think this was an inability to read the room kind of scenario. That's my thought.
Yeah, I think so. And just taking a quick poll between you know, co-host and co-host, I think we can both check off the fact that we don't live with our parents in their basement.
No.
Are you a hygienic person?
Very, yes.
I am also a pretty fucking hygienic person.
Yes.
Do you yell at 9-year-olds online?
I try not to interact with people online anymore because people suck. But no, I don't. That line is a little bit funny, because if you're playing Call of Duty, though, you're probably going to have, you know, a 12-year-old shouting obscenities and slurs at you.
Oh, not just Call of Duty. It happened when I was playing Sea of Thieves the other day as well.
There you go.
They are everywhere. Let's see. Are you like a fat, schlubby piece of shit that like pisses his pants while like fucking playing games?
No, but sometimes I feel that way, but no.
Right. I think we all do. Is your room clean or would somebody walk into your room and throw up?
No, order, order, structure, everything in its place and a place for everything.
Okay, same. I think that by all accounts, we just completely
busted the myth. Mythbusters.
I think by all accounts, we definitely busted this myth.
We did it. I'm sure this person exists.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it does, but this definitely felt like the World of Warcraft episode South Park.
That's exactly what it is. Yes, it's exactly
this
what it is.
This is just that in a song.
Yes. There's even sort of, I mean, they sort of lean into some of the concepts with pissing and shitting into jars or whatever, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Shout out Amazon warehouse workers.
That's a thing. Poor Amazon workers.
I almost tweeted Brian the other day. Right. I almost tweeted the other day, turned down a job at Amazon because I refused to come in a jar on my on the middle of the warehouse floor.
Oh, my God.
You take cum breaks. All right. Guys, let's move on to the next song, which we'll see what it's about here in a second as soon as Eric explains it. Night of the Red Rum.
Yeah. So at the end of the last track, we get an intro. Sounds like two people in hell, one of them asking the other how they got there. Kind of like that scene where two people in jail, like, what are you in for? And the guy starts telling a story about he goes to a cemetery with his girl and they go into a mausoleum and see all the stuff that this guy's buried with. And there's a bottle of something called red rum. So he opens it up and it smells terrible, but he drinks it anyway. And the drink makes two things happen. One, his dick bleeds a little bit. Two, he stabs his girl in the tits with a pen and runs away. So that's the immediate result of drinking the red rum. This is a song that's basically about that. There are some bafflingly shitty lines, like after he stabs her and she starts to chase him, he says, she like a wounded parrot and here come a carrot. They don't talk about any carrots. They don't talk anything about that, about parrots, nothing that conceptually leans into, oh, okay, I see metaphorically how parrot or carrot. That line doesn't have anything to do with anything. No additional context needed. That's just how he describes her after poking her in the tits with a pen. But then he smashes her in the head with a rock and kills her. The hook is kind of gibberishy and super what the fucky because he says, die, 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 die! With this voice crack that is just crazy to hear. And he's literally speaking gibberish at points. And he's doing this yum yum red rum. And then he says yum yum bedlam. And I was like, oh, that's the name of the next Joker's card. I guess this is where it came from. I wonder why. I don't know. But the story actually continues from there. He kills an underage prostitute in the next verse. Then he goes on to kill a bunch of other people. A cop, a jogger, a dog. He goes into a titty bar and kills the bouncer and a dancer. And then the bartender shoots him in the head and kills him. At one point in the song, he refers to himself as Mr. Happy, which is a reference to a song on Bizarre. This song definitely has some Hell's Pit vibes with the story and the way it goes and the whole killing spree that was... they were very present on that album, which were throwbacks to some of the early stuff. I think this beat is fine. Not bad, but it's also just kind of there. I don't know that this in any way furthers the story, but I don't know that every song on a Joker's Card album absolutely has to be furthering the concept. But what were your thoughts on it?
This definitely did not further the story for me, in my eyes at least. But it was a story, and I think it was pretty okay. There were some weird lines here and there, but I think that the beat complemented the story perfectly. I think that the start, because you're right, it launches immediately from the story of this song is in at the end of the last track. So if you put this on shuffle, you don't know he drank the rum. You kind of need that back. So I kind of wish that they would have put the last few lines of the story maybe as the beginning of this song. But just listening to this song, putting it on in the background, not really paying attention to the story, I think it starts out fantastic. It starts out super hard, rat-a-tat, TikTok, red rum, my dick bled some. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's when he goes and talks about killing. You already said, told the story, but I think the chorus was pretty good. I noticed Yum Yum Bedlam as well. I thought, oh, that's actually pretty sick that's the next Joker's card revealed here. And I can't wait to hear more about Yum Yum and their lure. I digress. I thought the flows were great. I thought the beat was pretty good. I thought it complemented the story very well. Overall, I think the song is pretty good. It definitely had some throwback vibes, like you were saying. And this song is just another song in the saga of Night of the 44 and Night of the Axe and Night of the Chainsaw. Just Night of Red Rum. I can't wait to see what the next night is going to come up with.
For sure. Well, okay. So those are our thoughts on Night of the Red Rum, which is interesting because most of the Night Ofs are Night of a Weapon. The Red Rum, not a weapon. He's, yeah, very different. But the next track is called Low, and it's almost a cover. Tell us about it.
So this song, let me read the about section on Genius real quick, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Like every Joker's Card album that came before Fearless Fred Fury, this track follows the tradition of ICP having at least one love song. This is also the second track on the album to be a parody / cover of another more recognized song, Time of the Season by Zombies.
You know what my thoughts on that are?
Yes.
What fucking part of this is a love song? Like, that person yep. should lose their annotation license. Fuck off.
Yep. It would be a love song if you listen to the first 10 seconds, listen to the beat and assume, oh, they're probably talking about love on this song. No, this in no way is anything about.
No, there's not even a relationship in any capacity referenced here. What do you, come on.
Eric, I was so close to making a Genius account and like annotating, like, don't fucking even pay attention to what this person said above me.
Maybe I can go in and downvote it or dispute it.
Yeah, no, because this is has no bearing on any sort of love song. The beat is super chill. Flows are nice. Talking about how they're so deep in hell that they look up and they see the lights of hell. Yeah, no, I thought this song, we're pretty late into the album at this point. This song, it was a nice change in pace to sort of break up the rest of the album. And so I think that is the purpose of it, and it did that well. What are your thoughts?
Well, if you're not familiar with the song this is based on, what's your name? Who's your daddy? And then the chorus is, it's the time for the season, not loving. Except they say, I'm so low, I look up and I see hell's glow. I mean, the hook is kind of good. I love that line. The song is about being a low person as far as your actions, being sort of scummy and low down and bad, but also being low emotionally. And I get what they're doing there. Singing, pretty sus in this one. And just like the singing that I just did, but maybe even more sus than that. There are a lot of brother samples throughout the second half of this song. Even ends with a brother at the end. I can't help but wonder if this was initially supposed to be on that brother EP. Or if the songs on the Brother EP were recorded for this or vice versa, or what the hell's going on there? Because this is not the only track where those Brother samples show up on here. So between the Brother samples and the random couple of Willoughby Rags intros, I'm curious about what was going on with this album and the recording of it. If they had a different concept at some point and they were going a different place, or if they recorded extra songs for the Gloomy Sunday and Brother EPs and Magical Bag of Poop as well, because Willoughby Rags was all over that, and ultimately decided to use them here or something like that, which maybe is where the whole flip the rat thing came from, because they were like, well, now we've got all these extra songs, let's move them here. There's something going on. I don't know what it is. I'm not sure how this all worked. I'd be curious to know what happened with the production, but I think there's a certain sense of this is pieced together from a lot of different places rather than we had a concept for an album and recorded it all for this purpose, if that makes sense.
No, that absolutely makes sense. There's something convoluted going on here with all of these releases in this sort of year and a half time span.
Something's going on. With that said, musically, this song doesn't do much for me. I never liked the original Zombie song, and I'm not a huge fan of this, but I do love that line. I'm so low, I look up and I see hell's glow. I think that's pretty wild.
I think that's a great line. I think that this song, I don't know, it was a little confusing to me. Maybe I was only half paying attention both of my listens, but it didn't really do much for me. Let's move on to the next song, a song called Triple X. Eric, what do you got?
Triple X sounds like a kind of medication or something.
Sounded like a wrestling move.
Oh yeah, like a suplex for sure.
Yeah, but like the triplex where it's a version of a suplex that's just modified.
Yeah, and it could be for all I know. I like the concept and the setup here. We've heard this before. Shaggy is the therapist. Jay is the patient, this time with multiple personality disorder or dissociative personality disorder, one of the two here. The beginning of the song Cemetery Girl had this dynamic where Shaggy is the therapist and Jay is the patient. Jacob's Word very much has that dynamic going on. We have heard tracks before where Jay is dealing with all of his different personalities and talking to them as if they are, you know, or speaking in the different voices. So this is concepts they have done before put together. So that dynamic works well. But the song itself, I think, is just okay. So Jay, the chorus is three murderers, one morbid man. Jay's got these three people that live within him. They are talking about killing people, mostly women. One of the themes, you know, we talked about the themes of this album. Really, the most prevalent theme is misogyny and violence against women, because that is throughout this album, present in almost every song. You know, Shaggy is, as the therapist, talking to each of the different personalities. They're saying stuff about killing people and doing weird stuff and eating, you know, dead bodies and, you know, all kinds of stuff. At the end, Shaggy kind of, I don't know if they didn't know how to end this song, but he just gets angry at them and says a bunch of stupid stuff that isn't particularly funny. And then it ends. And I'm like, well, that beat was fine. This song was fine. It was all kind of forgettable. It feels like an outtake to me. I don't know. What were your thoughts?
I think fine is a great way of putting it. This is not the best version of this interaction that they put out. Again, just like WTF, it's also not the worst version of this type of interaction that they put out, sure, in my opinion. I think the beat was okay. The story was good. I definitely think that this was a case of they didn't know how to end this song, and Shaggy kind of freaks out on the multiple personalities. Yeah, I mean, this song is okay.
Yeah,
Eddie, Hank, and Dan were good characters that Violent J played. Their interactions were fine. This song was fine.
It's like they had an idea for a song, but they didn't really figure out the song.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we both are kind of like, yeah, okay, this is there. Let's move on to track 12. This one is called Nobody's Fault.
Nobody's Fault. This sucks. First of all, I don't know if I mean, this is bad auto-tune, right? And the thing is, if you can point out the fact that there's auto-tune in this song, it's bad auto-tune. I think that's something that people can agree on, right? So this song is kind of like a pity song for Violent J, right? Just all these bad things that are happening, people are glad that they're not me. It's like I never learn. I always crash and burn kind of shit. bad auto-tune, boring beat, weird music video, forgettable song.
I gotta say, I wholeheartedly disagree on literally everything you said.
Oh, no.
Because this is a very different sound for them. They've never done a song like this.
Hell no.
I actually love the music. It's just a chill vibe. And here's the thing. This is a style. Like, I sort of, on one hand, I hate that they felt the need to copy this style because it's a very new, modern style. You've got lots of rappers doing this, put everything in auto-tune, and it's kind of a sing-songy, halfway between R&B and rap thing going on. There are tons of artists doing this. Lots of SoundCloud artists doing stuff like this.
Oh, yeah.
And even, you know, if you listen to like Juice WRLD or something, this is along that the lines of a style like that to me.
5 episodes ago.
I mean, I listened to that whole Juice WRLD album. It's like perfect top to bottom, in my opinion.
But I've got to say, of all the artists I've heard that do this style, they actually do it well. Does it sound like them? No, not really. But I think it feels good to listen to. I understand why they dropped this as a single. I feel like this is a song that probably could have gotten popular. That the light auto-tune they're putting on there, which is obvious and apparent, I think is for style, not to correct the pitch problems and stuff. However, it does do that as well.
Correct pitch problems.
But there's lots of artists, like you look at somebody like T-Pain, who can sing but made a career of singing in auto-tune because of the stylistic sound, right? This is somebody who is a mediocre singer. Not the worst I've ever heard, but certainly not a great singer. This puts them in a range where they sound about as good as anybody else doing this style with the perpetual auto-tune. I generally don't like it. I kind of liked this song. I also liked what it was about, because it's about feeling down on yourself. It's about not feeling like you don't fit in or feeling like you're getting fucked up in life and, you know, everybody's out to get you and you just can't do anything wrong. But in the end, it's about owning it. So he's saying, how the fuck did I get here? It's nobody's fault but mine. And by the end is sort of saying, the only person that can change this is me because I'm the only person responsible for getting me there. And I actually thought the video was fucking amazing. I thought it was so cool. Like, I love their video. I think also the subject matter of this song, having that sort of sad boy feel, fits into the style of music. But it also fits into the theme of the album. So we are totally on opposite ends for this one.
I think we can chalk this up, just like West Verner Avenue, to this is a style I'm not a huge fan of, whereas you are.
I'm not even a fan of this style. I just like it on this song, because normally I'm not that into it.
I don't know. We're in disagreement on this one, but it happens, guys.
Yeah, for sure.
It happens. All right. Well, hey, let's move on to the next song. This is a song called Hothead. What are your thoughts?
Pretty cool beat. The hook sounds interesting because they put this heavy process on the singing. There's also like a nursery rhyme in the hook. 1, 2, X is coming for you. 3, 4, oh wait, that's DMX. But anyway, they go up to 17 in this version. This is about somebody who's going crazy, doing violent and deranged things. Murder and necrophilia are the main topics here. There's one funny line where I swear I thought he said that he was eating a dead slug behind Walmart. And I was like, wow. That's a great line, but then I looked at it and he said dead slut, and I was like, oh, well, that's not as funny to me. I would have liked to, just him eating dead bugs behind Walmart would have been awesome, but I don't know. What were your thoughts on it?
I would have liked for it to have been dead bugs as well. My literal note, first note is, God, they are losing me so fast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is a clear point of, you can notice that this album is tanking, yes. For me at least. And I think for Eric as well. The verses are awful. The chorus is awful. The beat sucks. The story was fine. The nursery rhyme was cool. I mean, okay. But listen, 17 is a big number. if 17 is the number that you're branding yourself at, you know, with, if it's the number that you're going to stick so harshly with branding, do something other than a nursery rhyme that starts with one.
All the way up to 17.
All the way up to 17, guys. That's like half the song right there. They do it twice, and that's like half the song.
Yeah. Yeah. This also felt like an outtake track to me, honestly.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, there's not a lot to say about this song. It's Hothead because he feels his brain sizzling and it's making him go crazy, and he's sweating and his eyeballs are bulging and stuff. Like, okay, cool. Hothead. Let's move on to the next track. This is track 14. It's called Shimmer. We're in the home stretch here, so.
We are in the home stretch, ladies and gentlemen. So this was actually produced by Kuma.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who's back again. Kuma's back. It's Kuma. So, okay, so this song, there's an intro that's a little boy kind of praying to God to set up that there's this girl that would come into his closet every night that was dead, and that turns out to be Shimmer is her name. So yep. Shimmer is a dead girl that haunts some boy's closet.
Yes.
And that was revealed verse one. It gets right into it. Shimmer's not in heaven. Shimmer's not in hell. Shimmer's in the Echo Side, as far as I can tell. It very much so set up the story perfectly. By the way, the guitar riff during the intro, during the little boy's prayer, was very cool. The effects that they put on it, the way it was just produced, was incredible. They use that same guitar riff throughout the entire song, but they beef it up with an actual beat behind it as well.
Yeah.
So I thought that the beat was fantastic in this song. I thought that the story was pretty good. The flows were fine. I think that the chorus was actually pretty fucking good. Oh, we have a Willoughby Rags outro as well.
After all this time, yes.
Willoughby Rags is back. I don't know what the fuck he was doing for better half of this album, but he's back.
And also there's Eric brother samples in that Willoughby Rags outro.
What's
that
about? True, yeah.
Yeah. My thoughts. So you set up the story, right? It's a kid talking to God saying that a dead woman named Shimmer comes to his closet every night. He also says that his mom and stepdad say that God isn't real, but he believes he is and asks God to help him. You mentioned that Echo Side reference, which is what is cited as the first Dark Lotus song ever. It's the last track on The Amazing Jekyll Brothers. So that's kind of a cool link. But basically, Shimmer keeps showing up and basically being scary, and it's making him go crazy slowly bit by bit, and people don't believe him, and he can hardly stand to be at home, and there's references to his stepdad being abusive, and it's really just making him go crazy that this Shimmer keeps showing up and pointing at him and looking at him. It's kind of like the monkey in the closet on Family Guy, that
right.
it's kind of like that. But he finally just gives in and walks into her and just gives up, right? He's like, let it take me. He's tried everything. He even tried putting a Bible in there, but she basically was like, fuck that, I'm gonna take a shit on this thing, and doesn't even care.
Right.
So he gives up. He's like, I can't live like this anymore. I'm just gonna walk straight into her and I guess die. But what happens when he does that is she goes away, she disappears, he's left in the closet holding the Bible, all cleaned up now, and he says that his bravery was rewarded. And I'm like, wait a minute, that wasn't bravery. He didn't say, I'm going to confront her and confront my fears. He said, I can't live like this anymore. I'm just going to give in and let her take
it. Give in and fucking kill myself, pretty much.
Right, yeah. Right. So if it was, I'm going to be brave and confront her, then it would have factored really well into the theme of Fearless Fred Fury, but it just doesn't read that way. I also think that there is probably some deeper message and context about his home situation with his mom and his abusive stepdad, because they mention that a few times without ever really drawing a lot of direct correlations, but I think there's probably something there. That's my thought.
It's good thoughts.
Thanks.
So I think that it's safe to say that Willoughby Rags and Hulk Hogan actually hang out sometimes.
Very clearly.
And that was just Willoughby was recording this outro while Hulk Hogan was just over there for the game.
Yeah, probably.
Just over there to watch the big game.
Yeah.
Also, Willoughby Rags says, slap a condom on a pipe bomb and slide it right up that punk ass. I thought that was actually kind of fucking hard as hell. I like that line.
So let's be fair here. I'm not shitting on any of the few parts Willoughby Rags has. Awesome. Willoughby Rags shit is awesome on this. It's just weird that there's three or four sort of randomly placed pieces, and it's not a thematically relevant element of the album.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I want more Willoughby Rags so that it makes sense for him to be here.
Exactly. Let Willoughby Rags do that intro track and explain, say all the same stuff, but also put in a line about why Willoughby Rags is part of this. Let Willoughby Rags do the outro and the warning and all that stuff and put him in between every few songs. Like, go for it.
Do it. Now!
For the re-release. Yeah.
Perfect. So let's move on to the next track. This is going to be track 15 called Freedom. Eric, what are your thoughts?
All right, let's be real here. This is the last song on the album. This is the final song on the Joker's card. This is where the album naturally should end after this song. It's a feel-good track. It belongs here at the end because traditionally on a Joker's card, they will wrap it up with something like this that is a little more meaningful. I think this beat is chill. I kind of dig it. The song gets a little sappy, but it's not overwhelming. They're just basically listing off all the things you're free to do in life, whatever you want to do or pursue. And it's meant to be exactly that, a feel-good song. At the beginning, Shaggy says, unless you're locked up, you're free to do whatever you know, all of these things, whatever you want. However, they definitely list some things you are not free to do, because there's some violent things that are referenced here that I'm like, no, you're not free to attack people or kill people and stuff. You can't do that. Most of it is pretty feel-goody, and a lot of it works well with the theme of Fearless Fred Fury, more or less. There's a couple of weird things, though. I'd like to point out that among the things Violent J says he's free to do are worship Satan, start a drug cartel, play a tuba, drive an Uber, wear condoms for socks, have 10 kids and adopt 7 more, but then feed them on the floor because he doesn't have a table or plates. So those are all things that Violent J wanted you to know he's free to do. Some of them, like starting a drug cartel, you are not free to do, just for clarification. Shaggy, oddly, says he's free to, he actually, most of his verse goes back and forth with, I'm free to do this, but I'm also free to do the opposite. And in this one, he says, I'm free to fuck hoes and not be gay, but I think it's implied that he's also free to be gay.
Correct.
But also, I don't think you get to choose that. I don't think you get to choose whether you're gay.
Yeah, that's not a check the box.
Right.
Decide.
But, hey, if you want to be gay, go be gay. No, it's but I at the same time, I suppose if you are gay, being able to be allowed to be by, you know, society or whatever, that would be a good thing. Kind of a weird line. Definitely borders on. Nope, doesn't border on. Is straight out homophobic. Shaggy is afraid to be gay. He wants to make sure you know he isn't. No slur though. At least he said gay. He could have said something
very
worse.
True. But it is. God, is it to the point where we're praising him for just saying gay?
No, this is not praise. This is pointing out that I don't like that line, that it made a feel-good song feel less good.
Feel weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Song's fine. Not bad. I really wish this had been the last track. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I have the same thoughts as you, pretty much. It's a feel-good song, and it's supposed to make you feel good. If you don't pay attention to some of the lyrics, then you can. I would have loved this song a lot more if it was the last track, though, as it deserves to be. As it deserves to be. Yeah, no, those are my thoughts on Freedom.
You know what would have made this song better to me? If it had been the last track, I think, honestly, you've got that Willoughby Rags intro into this, which makes it sort of feel like it's the last song. If it had been the last one, if that line had been Shaggy said, I'm free to fuck hoes and you're free to be gay. If he had said that, I would have actually loved the line.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Versus him saying, like, for him to say, I'm free to be me, you're free to be you, I would have been cool with that. But the fact that he had to say, I'm free to fuck hoes and not be gay, kind of bothered me. It hurt the song for me. And I know every time this comes up, there are definitely people that listen to this and they're like, please stop harping on that. But hopefully our listeners are the people that listen to this and they go, no, I agree with you.
Agree, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk. God damn. Let's talk about the next song, which isn't a song. It's a warning. It's called Beware, track 16. Talk to us about this.
Yeah, this is, you know, I'll read what is the lyrics are to this. Because it is just a produced, spoken, just like the intro.
Yes, just like the intro.
So it says, beware, the members of ICP feel that the very next song, I Like It Rough, the final track of the Fearless Fred Fury album, is the most disturbing work of their entire career. Because of the sadistic sexual nature and the extreme violent content that follows, they wish to advise a warning. Continue listening at your own risk. I listened to this and didn't give it too much thought because this is very cheesy. And I think putting something like this before a song does nothing but hurt the following song. For some people, it brings up expectations of this to be a really fucked up song. And when it's not, they're upset. And some people think, oh, this is a joke. This is going to be like a regular funny song. And it turns out to just be a try hard piece of garbage.
Yeah.
It hurts the song.
What does this warning do? Is this warning there to actually, hey, look, if you've had sexual trauma or if you are very sensitive to this type of topic, here's a warning. Don't turn it on. Or is it, we are taking pride in trying to make the most fucked up song, so this warning is sort of a tongue-in-cheek, like, yeah, we know you're going to listen to it, but this is just trying to add to how extreme we think this song is. I think it's that one. I think it's the latter.
Yeah, I think it is too, and that is always the wrong move.
Yeah.
To put some sort of, there's never a right way to do this.
No.
Well, with that being said, guys, before I intro this next song, I do have to read this written statement here. Beware. The co-hosts of ICUP with We feel that our review of this very next song, I Like It Rough, the final track of the Fearless Fred Fury album, is the most harsh critical review of our entire career. Because of the sadistic sexual nature and extreme violent content that was attempted to be talked about in this song, we would like to advise a warning. Continue listening to this podcast at your own risk. Eric, I'll let you go ahead. What are your thoughts on I Like It Rough?
That was a very appropriate warning.
You know what? No expectations have been drawn from that at all.
No. So here's the thing. This song isn't really all that extreme. It's just edgy. It's trying to be edgy. I don't wish I'd stopped listening because it's too intense or offensive. I wish I stopped listening because it fucking sucks. Is it weird that I listen to this and I think that this is below them? It sounds like a song that an aspiring horrorcore artist would write, trying their best to be edgelord and shocking. Like, just like, I'm going to make the most offensive thing I can. There's just no charisma here. There's nothing clever about it. There's the second verse is so poorly put together and stupid. It's just Violent J alternating, let me choke you with your panties and then this, and I'll let you choke me with your panties and then this 12 times. 12 times he says, choke with your panties. It's hardly even a real verse. That was the point in the song. We're listening to it in the car and Christy goes, what the fuck are they doing right now? And I was like, I don't know. Listening to this song twice was a chore, and I'll be honest, the second time, this song is over 6 minutes long. I skipped through the last two-ish minutes. There's also a brother hidden at the end. Why does this album end with Brother? Was this supposed to be on the Brother EP? This song doesn't fit with this album at all. It doesn't further the theme of Fearless Fred Fury. It feels 100% tacked on after Freedom. And it's just them just Violent J. Shaggy, I don't even think Shaggy's on it at all. It's just Violent J trying to say...
You know what, Shaggy? Good move.
Yes. It's just Violent J trying to say the most sexually violent things that he can say. And it's not clever. It's not funny. The beat's not great. It's not fun to listen to. And it's not so offensive that you go, holy fuck, I can't believe they said that. You just go, oh, guys, come on. You can do better than this. I mean, those are my thoughts. What are yours?
So, this song sucks so much ass. It is not in any way shocking or disturbing.
No.
Or anything of, like, anywhere close to those two words would I use to describe this song. This is definitely somebody trying their hardest to be an edgelord and say shocking things at a middle school level. I think that Violent J is coming off, and this is a massive assumption on my part, but I think that Violent J is coming off of a bunch of bullshit that has happened in the last 3 years of his life and coming out of it in sort of like a midlife crisis, needs to prove something.
We've definitely noticed that.
And and that has been pointed to multiple times, and we've talked about it, and I think that this is just another extension of that. Needing to prove that he can say things for shock value, needing to prove that he can be divisive and be a horrorcore. Y'all pretty much are the face and name of horrorcore rapping. You don't need to prove it at all.
There are a lot of small name horrorcore rappers and wannabes that have taken ICP's style and what they established and are trying to make it more extreme and make it more edgy and go, yeah, ICP was shocking back then. Look what I'm going to do to it now. And it comes off feeling corny. This feels corny. This feels like you are now trying to copy the little guys that are trying to copy you. And it also, on some level, reads as, which I pride them, I respect them for going 30 years and not making music that feels derivative necessarily, but still sounding like them and still feeling like, hey, you're in the game here. You're still driving things forward.
Yeah.
This song feels like a you're losing touch.
Oh, yeah. I also think that both times I've listened to this song, I've forgotten about the panties verse.
Holy fuck that shit.
Both times.
It's the worst verse.
Both times I've gotten towards the end in tears from laughter from the mental image of him with his sexual partner, and he like reaches down his throat and takes out just this sopping wet wad of panties. He's like, okay, now your turn, and just crams them down her throat. And just the thought of them swapping saliva-soaked, disgusting panties from back and forth is just the funniest thing in the world to me.
It's funny because I didn't picture it going down their throat. I pictured holding them, like twisting them so you've got it between your two hands and pressing it against the neck. But it could be either way. They don't clarify. The thing is, if in a verse you said, choke me with your panties and do this, then let me choke you with your panties and do this, and then you move the fuck on and keep talking. But to go back and forth literally 12 times, I was like, please stop. Please stop.
I can't. I remember the first time I was listening, I was like, just waiting. I was like, okay, is he going to do it again? Is he going to do it again? Yeah! Choke your panties! And then, like, okay, oh yeah, choke you with your panties. Just cheering it on each time, getting more and more just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. I don't think this is darker. Here's the thing. You can make a dark song, but you have to make it mean something for it to land.
Exactly.
And this doesn't mean anything.
Not at all.
No.
So that's it. Well, hey. That's our review, song by song, 17 tracks spanning over an hour, I think in 9 minutes. guys, it's time to give our overall thoughts. And I'll go ahead and go first. Not gonna lie to you guys, I hate lying to you guys. That's why I never do it. Every time Eric tells you one lie, it just kills me inside. But I'm not gonna do that to you. This album was extremely punishing to listen to. I think that there were some good things in there. It's not one of those releases where I'm panicking to figure out what song I want to put on the playlist. I have that down. I'm not panicking about that. But listen, I was telling Eric before we pressed record this morning, because I usually do my last listen Sunday mornings. I found it extremely hard to wake up early enough to listen to this one more time, because I knew what I was about to have to listen to, and I would have much rather spent that hour and 9 minutes in bed. But I got up and I listened to it. Whereas these past few weeks, I've been like, yeah, let's get up and listen to this EP again real fast. Yeah, let's get up. You know, like it's been a while since I've had to drag myself out of bed for my second listen through. And I think that this album was not drag out of bed to listen to worthy. Like I said, there's a couple good songs in there, some good aspects, some, you know, good stuff. But then there's just the baffling, like, Game Over, I Like It Rough. I mean, stuff that had no business seeing the light of day, in my opinion. And those aspects far outweighed the good aspects, unfortunately. Eric, what were your thoughts?
Well, you know what? I'll keep it pretty brief. I like that they chose a theme for this Joker's card. On a couple of the more recent ones, the theming was a little vague. The message on this, yes, feels a bit muddled, but I think the intro clearly explained to me what's Fred Fury, even if I'm not sure it all makes a lot of sense. It's get revenge, stand up for yourself, appreciate life. All right, cool. How does that relate to Fred? Well, I guess if you don't want him to punch you to death, don't be a bitch or something.
Yeah.
Like I said, the other main theme of this album, and one that's more prevalent than any of the others, is be violent and kill women. It comes up in so many songs. I would love to hear ICP talking about killing people that deserve it, because that's my favorite thing that they talk about.
Correct.
It's just that theme by the end, especially after listening to the last track, is so pervasive and so present throughout the album. It's very off-putting. That's not a thing that I really like hearing. If it's meaningful in a song or something, okay. But it started to feel a little like, hey, did you just get out of a bad relationship? Are you okay, man? Like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Overall, this album, with that said, is a very bland sounding album, which is shocking because you've got a bunch of producers, some of which are very good at what they do, that these should all be really unique, cool sounding songs. But the whole thing from beginning to end, maybe save one or two tracks, is pretty middling. The same goes for the songs themselves. I said it a couple times during, so many of these songs feel like outtakes to me. I also really want to know what's going on with the Brother and Willoughby Rags stuff. Was it done intentionally to tie into Gloomy Sunday and Willoughby Rags' Bag of Poop and Brother? Or were these leftover concepts that didn't make it there? Was it all recorded once? Like, it's not like it matters where the songs came from, but because all that stuff is here and it doesn't feel like it's meaningfully tying back to those EPs, it makes it feel a bit sort of glued together. There's something strange about it, but those are my thoughts.
Absolutely. Agreed. Well, let's go ahead and talk about our personal favorite tracks. Eric, I'll let you go first. What were your thoughts?
You're not going to like this, but Nobody's Fault is the only one that I liked listening to and would listen to again.
Okay. That's fine. I respect that. I absolutely respect that. I think that that Nobody's Fault is good to go.
Okay, what's yours?
We'll go ahead and toss that one on. I gotta say, you're not gonna like this, but Wes Werner.
Funny. Yeah, no, I didn't like that one that much.
No, I thought it was camp. It was the only song that was campy in a it knows that it was campy
self-aware kind of tongue-in-cheek
self-aware type of way. I think everything else was just campy or miss the mark on what it was supposed to do.
Well, there you go. There's our two songs.
So we will toss those bad boys on. Heck yes. What are we thinking for our Faygo scores?
Well, let's start with music and beats. I'll go first real quick. with very few exceptions, I thought this was a boring album to listen to. And sometimes it's okay for a beat not to have a ton of personality and stand out if the story being told or the flows or something are the real showcase. That's not the case for most of these. I went with a 2.5 because I thought the beats were straight down the middle. What did you think?
Yeah, music and beats, I think, at best were okay. At worst were slightly under okay. Very underwhelming. I also went with a 2.5. It was extremely middle of the road.
Yeah.
Lyrics and flows, I went with a 2 on this one. I think that although there was some good storytelling, there's a lot of shit that missed the mark. There's a lot of stuff that was just either confusing or didn't quite do what they thought it was going to or what they intended for it to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think there were some decent flows, and I think the singing on this is mostly handled pretty well because a lot of it is Violent J, and sometimes that can be rough, but I think the producers handled what he did well. But there's also a lot of, at times, poorly thought through songs that don't feel complete, some cheesy lines, some super edgelordy shit. I actually knocked a full point off for I Like It Rough because I thought the flows overall were okay, but I went to a 2.5.
Skits and interludes, I think, might be my highest score.
Okay.
On this album, because like we said, everything that Willoughby Rags said was great. The lack of Willoughby Rags is not great. I think having the brother thing in sewn into Willoughby Rags and a couple of other things was baffling. I'm taking some points off for lack of consistency and theme, but individually, all of the intros and outros and things that explained songs in the album, I thought were very good. Gonna go ahead and take a half a point itself off for the entire song dedicated as a warning track to I Like It Rough. And I'm going to go ahead and go a 2.5. It would have been a 3 without it.
Okay. Well, I also went with a 2.5, actually. I liked the Willoughby Rags skits, but they felt random. They didn't feel connected to the concept or the album. What does he have to do with this? Just tell me, and then I feel better about it. And put him more consistently on this. But it's cool to hear him, so I liked that. The other skits, there is the intro and the warning track, which sounded good. I have nothing wrong with how those were produced, and they make sense on the album where they are. And then there's one other skit that I can think of that's talking about why you're in hell and drinking the red rum, which, why is that the only other skit? The skits, there's nothing cohesive here. There's nothing that feels like it all makes sense together. Individually, each one is right. Fine. But when you put it on an album, you go, what is happening? It gives the album an even more disjointed feel.
Yeah, they don't string together for a larger purpose.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Vibe at time of release. I'll go ahead and take this one first. This one, I went with a 1.5. I think that they're coming off the heels of 3 pretty decent EP releases with Gloomy Sunday, Brother, and Willoughby Rags' Magical Bag of Poop. I think that as a fan that would have been extremely excited to get this in 2018 and then have it be pushed off and give them even more time to work on this, and not even give it till February of the next year, and this is what I got, I would have been pissed. I think that the pushback of this release really hurts the vibe of it at the time of the release, because this would have been even more anticipated than it was if it would have originally came out when it was supposed to. What are your thoughts?
I think this was a pretty big miss. It made me wonder, I was like, is this what people wanted? Is this what the Juggalos wanted to hear? And maybe I don't know anymore. I'm not sure. I hope not. I hope that people were like, yeah, this ain't it. And you're right. After everything that had come up leading up to this, the only reason I'm not going lower is because it's a Joker's card and they released a new Joker's card. And that's always kind of a cool, exciting thing. And there's value to that. And they came up with a new character and there's some cool things about the concept. But when you listen to the album, you're like, ugh, this is not great I gave it a 2 because I just think it wasn't the right thing for that time.
Perfect.
Well,
so what do we got overall?
That brings us to a 2.25 exactly. I think this should be a 2, but we can't fight math. This is a 2.5 Faygo release.
You know what? Fearless Fred Fury, thank the mathematicians for that bump up, because you don't fucking deserve it.
Nah.
2.5, more respectable than it deserves, but that's what it got. That's okay, guys. This is our episode. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. We had a great time. Come on back next week, where we are reviewing Fearless Fred Fury's companion EP, 2019's Flip the Rat. I cannot wait. I have still have high expectations for it. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Until then, Eric, how can people talk to us?
Well, you can find us, the podcast, on Twitter, ICUPWWE, nice and easy. You can also, if you're more of an email ninja, like we said at the top, you can email us, ICUPWWE@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter, Nuclear is Lonely, or you can go to my website, ericconway.com. And Aaron, where can people find you?
You can find me in all my social links, as well as a link to my Etsy store where I sell original paintings, and a link to my merchandise website where some of the designs that Eric has made for me are on t-shirts.
Woo!
At www.aaronlocklear.com. That is where you can find all that stuff. You can also find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/gristlemedia. Guys, for Eric, I'm Aaron. Thank you so much for listening and hanging out with us. Can't wait to do it again next week. Big ol' whoop whoop out there. We'll see you later.
Whoop whoop. Don't. I'm telling you, do not pay attention to any of the annotations for this album. That's why up front I'm like, these people are just putting in their own thoughts and it's all bullshit.
It's all bullshit. Every fucking thing is, yeah.
It's garbage. It's garbage.
God, this would put any random person so misinformed about this whole album.
Yes.
Anyways.